evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you today, Monday, July 22, 2019. An African Union special envoy in Juba says South Sudanese men must get involved in ending sexual violence.
Why? Because these women are their mothers, their sisters, their daughters. They're not some women out there who is suffering and I don't care about. These are their communities.
And Jungle Estate women are demanding more protections after a reported gang rape there.
They went and hid in the bush for some hours, and they met some two women who had gone to collect firewood in the forest. So in that process, they continuously raped the women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An African Union special envoy who is on a five-day visit to South Sudan is calling on the country's leaders to end the pervasive problem of sexual violence in the country. Aya Chebi, the AU special envoy on youth, says authorities must involve men if South Sudan is going to end gender-based violence. Onan Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Juba.
AU Special Envoy Aya Chebi says South Sudanese must stop stigmatizing women as victims and men as perpetrators of sexual violence. And she tells South Sudan in Focus that South Sudanese leaders and rights activists must involve men if they want to see real change take place.
Men should be doing all these initiatives to end gender-based violence. Why? Because these women are their mothers, their sisters, their daughters. They're not some women out there who is suffering and I don't care about. These are their communities. So if it's not my daughter today, it's going to be my daughter tomorrow. Violence will knock her door tomorrow.
Chebi says the African Union's action plan for ending gender-based violence focuses on ending all forms of violence, including genital mutilation and child marriage. South Sudanese communities must think about women as an integral part of society by empowering them in all sectors through peace-building efforts that promote social cohesion, according to Chebi. She says rights advocates should promote strong laws that punish the perpetrators of sexual violence, noting that survivors of attacks are unlikely to speak up unless there are laws against sexual violence are enforced.
So I call on civil society to advocate for legal frameworks that protect women. For the communities, there is also resilience and community. Even in violent extremism, they call it community policing, which means the community protects itself. And I think that's important. And again, men are part of it. So if someone is abusing another woman, men should stand up and say, that is not acceptable.
Simon Marot Tonlong, a member of the African Union's Youth Advisory Council, says preventing sexual violence begins at home.
How will you feel if your sister, if your daughter, or your mother, like undergo such kind of what of troubling experiences? It's sad. So it will start from families. It will not come from outside. It will not be organizations. It will not be the government. It will not be institutions. It has to be individuals. And it has to start from families for us to all be advocates.
Marot says AU member states, including South Sudan, must ratify all AU policies that protect all citizens, including women. And it is the duty of every citizen to hold the government of South Sudan accountable for enforcing those policies.
So if we don't hold our institutions at the grassroots level, at the country level accountable, at the regional level accountable, then we will not have an impact, even if we pass a lot of policies there.
Earlier this month, the AU's Office of the Legal Council signed a draft document for the formation of a hybrid court for South Sudan, as stipulated in Article 5 of the Revitalized Peace Deal, which deals with transitional justice institutions. The African Union is responsible for establishing the court in consultation with South Sudan's transitional government of national unity. In April, U.S. documents saw the Kiir administration signed a $3.7 million with the U.S. consulting firm Gainful Solutions, managed by Michael Randberger, a former U.S. diplomat in Africa, to smooth relations with the Trump administration and to block the formation of the hybrid court. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
And women's rights activists and leaders in Jonglei State are calling on state officials there to do more to protect women and girls against sexual and physical abuse. The call comes a week after armed cattle raiders, suspected of being from neighboring Fengak State, reportedly gang-raped two women in Jonglei State's Duk Pedyet County. Deng Gaideng has that story for VOA from Bor.
A 30-year-old mother of three who spoke on condition of anonymity because of the stigma associated with rape victims in South Sudan says she was walking to Bor town from her village about 3 miles away when she met an armed man on the road in 2017. Speaking in Dinka, the woman says the man threatened to kill her if she resisted him.
When that happened, I hated myself and felt like that was the end of my life. I felt so crushed and useless. But because God can turn a bad situation around, that is why I am here today talking to you.
The woman says a local non-profit organization called African Leadership and Reconciliation Ministries, or ALAMB, brought her to a counseling center in Bor, where she and other traumatized women received counseling in 2018. She says state officials should be providing good security in every corner of the country so that citizens, especially women, can move freely. Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwol Manyang confirms that two women who had gone off to collect firewood were gang-raped by a group of men suspected of being from neighboring Pangak State last Friday in a place called Dorok of Duk Pedyet County.
They went and hid in the bush for some hours and they met some two women who had gone to collect firewood in the forest. So in that process, They continuously raped the women, those two women. And these men were from Gawe. These are men who raped the women continuously until evening. When the women came back, that is when they reported what had happened to them.
Manyang did not explain how she knew the suspected rapists were from Gawe in Pangak State. Jonglei State Assembly lawmaker Helen Akech Mariar says she is shocked and saddened by the incident.
According to the cultures of South Sudanese, a woman is not supposed to sleep with you by force, but we have seen this thing happening, and the scenario of Dorok is an evident. And so we stand up as women parliamentarians, especially to condemn the action. And we are calling upon the government of Pangak State to take action against such people. Those criminals or whatever they are, they must be brought to book and they must face justice.
Ake says it is a well-known fact that South Sudanese women are at high risk of being sexually abused while carrying out their daily chores, such as collecting firewood.
When we look at South Sudan in particular, the means of survival, of course, we do not have maybe electricity such that people cook in their houses, and so women always resort to going out and look for firewood. They go out to dig, cultivate, and other things. And so once they are out there doing their daily activities, then they are always subjected to such a criminal act.
Jonglei State lawmaker Mary Ayom, who says she too is saddened by the attack, is calling on the governor and state authorities to ensure that perpetrators are apprehended and justice takes its course.
That incident is not good, by the way. We don't like it. As the women here in the parliament, we really condemn that one. It's not good to the women. It's abuse the right of the women.
Helen says all men, regardless of tribe, should protect and respect women.
How do you feel when you enforce yourself into a woman? That woman is supposed to be your mother. She is supposed to be your sister. She is supposed to be your wife. Even if that woman is from different state or from different tribe, you are supposed to respect her the same way you respect a woman in your own compound.
For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Field commanders from the South Sudan People's Defense Force, or SSPDF, and the SPLA-IO in Yei River State's Morobo County are urging displaced residents to return home and rebuild their homes and lives. But some former refugees and IDPs who have come back say they want the two sides to end human rights violations first. Daniel Friday Martin visited Morobo County recently and has filed this report for VOA from Yei.
At the height of the fighting in 2016, thousands of Morobo County residents fled their homes and sought refuge in distant rural areas of Yei River State and at refugee camps in neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. After the 2018 revitalized peace deal was signed, some refugees and IDPs voluntarily returned. Joy Alomo, a former IDP who recently returned to Morobo County, says thousands of people like her have returned home, but they need financial help. Speaking in her native Kakwa, Alomo says government and opposition forces must do more than talk about their commitment to abiding by the revised peace deal and respect the rights of civilians.
I thank God because those forces have jointly met today and I am happy for that. At the moment we don't have shelters. We need farm tools and seeds so that we can start a new life. As women, we also move from one place to another. The forces should not rape women and they should also stop looting civilians' properties.
William Bakata, a retiree from Uganda, says both the SPLA-IO and the SSPDF have been maintaining relative peace and stability in Morobo County for the past several months. But he says South Sudanese refugees in neighboring countries want assurances they will be safe and will receive assistance once they return home.
As a civilian, I wanted if I can sleep in my house, just freely move freely to whatever location I want to go and do my business without any other restriction. Here in Morobo is all the houses are vandalized and that is the biggest challenge that we have. But I've already started actually putting some farm and then trying to do something to my house to keep me up.
Bakata urges both parties to the conflict to recommit themselves to fully implementing the peace agreement and to end the suffering of Yei River State civilians. Speaking in Arabic, Colonel David Kamis, the SSPDF field commander in charge of Morobo, as well as civilians of free movement and protection.
My message to the civilians is that let them return to their homes. From our side as SSPDF and also from the side of the SPLA-IO, we agreed to allow free movement of the civilians from areas either under the control of SSPDF or the SPLA-IO. And this is an assurance from us, the military, in uniforms.
Kamis says the SSPDF and the SPLA-IO held a series of joint meetings to guarantee free movement of soldiers and civilians and to build confidence in the civilian population. Speaking in Arabic, Brigadier General Clement Hassan, the SPLA-IO Brigade Commander in Morobo County, says the opposition is committed to implementing the deal, but he says state lawmakers from both sides are reluctant to do so.
We as soldiers from either the SPLA-IO or the SSPDF forces in the bushes are tired of this war. The suffering is not only on the civilians, but also the forces. I want to say that the war has ended since last year. We, the soldiers, have no problems with ourselves. But it is only the politicians, both in the SPLA-IO or in the government. We don't understand why the politicians allow other people to confuse us to fight, and I don't understand these politicians.
Hassan says the SPLA-IO is committed to working with the government to restore stability in Yei River State. But James Kenyi, the bishop of Morobo Diocese, says the church is monitoring both sides to say they stick to their word. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What is UNICEF doing to help protect South Sudan's borders against the spread of Ebola? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you ever treat yourself to something special? What is that and why?
I really like food, so anytime I want to treat myself to something special, I get a nice meal and a drink and I just have fun.
Oh no, I don't treat myself to something special because I see it as waste of time and waste of income.
Giving yourself a treat, I see it as a healthy something, because if you do that, you release some stress, maybe you are bored. By so doing, you get rid of those boredness.
I do so because it depends on how much I've spent and how I've struggled to get what I've achieved in life. That's why I do so. I can go out with friends, I can go in for drinks.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. As aid agencies and medical experts in the Democratic Republic of Congo struggle to contain a year-long Ebola outbreak in the country's eastern region, neighboring countries are trying to make sure the disease doesn't cross borders. There's particular concern about the ability of South Sudan, Burundi, and Rwanda to fight the disease. Patsy Nickel, Chief of Communications for UNICEF's Africa Services, says the UN's Children's Agency is one of the organizations at the forefront of this effort.
So the Ebola cases in Uganda, for one, have demonstrated that the risk of Ebola spreading beyond DRC obviously remains very high. Now, we have the situation in the DRC today that continues to report 10 to 15 suspected cases per day. And this is including health worker infections as well as community deaths. And many of these contacts are still being traced, and some of them are untraced. So while response efforts inside DRC, of course, need to be redoubled, preparedness efforts in high-risk neighboring countries are also urgently being stepped up, and this is mainly to the east for now. And the quick and very effective response in Uganda really demonstrates the importance of investing in this preparedness. Now, we have a situation in Uganda where, of course, the government there is quite familiar with responding to Ebola from previous times, as well as other hemorrhagic diseases, of course. So this strong government leadership has really been extremely important and effective. The same is not true for the other countries. Like the high priority countries right now for us are South Sudan, Burundi, and Rwanda.
What are you doing in those high priority countries?
So, for instance, I can give you an example of what's happening in South Sudan, which is a country that already has a large humanitarian infrastructure, which now, of course, has been used also to respond and do preparedness work around Ebola. Since the beginning of the year, we have, for instance, UNICEF has been working with local humanitarian actors and with the local government in order to raise awareness around Ebola and how it is contained, how to contain it, how to respond to it. Almost 500,000 people have already been reached with group work and group communication, and they have been with trained local frontline workers in these kinds of messaging. We work around water and sanitation and hygiene, both in health units and also in high-risk sort of border areas. And these are the kind of things that we work in the other countries as well.
Right. What is being done specifically to protect children from this outbreak?
Yes, so one of the pillars that UNICEF works around is, for instance, psychosocial support, right? So particularly children that have been affected by the disease, whether directly themselves, and we know, sadly, with this outbreak, There is a higher level of infection among children. There's about 30% as opposed to previous outbreaks where only 20% of the of those affected were children. Now it's higher, and many of those children that are affected are below the age of five. So first of all, it comes down to sensitizing families and parents to understand what the symptoms are, but also frontline workers, also health workers, community workers, and pediatricians.
That's Patsy Nickell with UNICEF in Johannesburg, speaking with my colleague Kate Pound-Dotson. The World Health Organization last week declared the outbreak a public health emergency of international concern after at least three patients crossed into Uganda and a case was found in Goma of the DRC. The outbreak has killed more than 1,700 people. We turn to Zimbabwe now, where the United Nations says the food situation is moving from a crisis to an emergency. It says a majority of the population is food insecure because of El Nino-induced drought and the ongoing economic meltdown. Columbus Mavunga has more from a poor township just outside Harare.
The impoverished town of Epworth, less than an hour drive southeast of Harare, is one of the places in Zimbabwe in desperate need of food aid. 48-year-old Placidus Shibura says she's struggling to look after her grandchildren because of the harsh economic conditions in Zimbabwe. She says, "We have resorted to just one meal a day, and at times it's just the vegetables we get in our garden. We are struggling to get money to buy food. I wish donors would bring us food, especially for the children, as I'm not employed. Even school fees I can't pay. One of the children was not well, so medical bills are coming." According to a recent report by UN aid agencies and the government, Zimbabwe needs about $218 million to stave off hunger about 5.5 million people between now and April 2020, when the next harvest is expected. That's assuming there will be enough rains. Bishop Parajuli, the coordinator of UN agencies in Zimbabwe, is urging farmers to invest in irrigation and small grains as part of efforts to reduce the effects of climate. The World Body says Zimbabwe is among several Southern African nations hit by extreme weather in the 2018-2019 growing season. The drought has devastated crops, especially corn, which is used to make the staple food sadza, a thick porridge that is served with relish. In addition, Cyclone Idai in March destroyed many crops a few weeks before harvest time.
Unfortunately, we're moving from crisis to emergency, which is pretty serious. Also, the economic challenges facing the country. People have lost their income, and the situation is really precarious.
The drought has also affected the water supply. Michael Chideme, the spokesman for Harare, says two of the capital's reservoirs have dried out and others are following suit. Water rationing has begun. Parajuli says Zimbabwe is hoping and depending on the generosity of international community. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Cameroon says armed separatists are occupying more than 50 schools in its western English-speaking regions. The alleged occupation could complicate government plans to restart education in the regions come September. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Bamenda, from northwestern Cameroon.
Cameroon authorities say separatist fighters have taken over scores of schools in the English-speaking northwest region, using them for training and to hide from the military. Cameroon's basic education chief for the northwest region, Wilfred Wembeng Dong, spoke to reporters on Sunday.
We have about 48 schools that have been destroyed in our system and another 53 schools that are occupied presently. As regards our teachers, we are doubting the whereabouts of more than 3,000 teachers for the schools that are not going.
Ndong said most of the missing teachers probably escaped to safer areas in French-speaking regions or are hiding in the bush. He said school attendance in the region has dropped from 422,000 in 2017 to 5,500 this year and is mostly in safer towns like Bamenda and Kambe. Cameroon separatists in social media posts denied they are occupying the schools but said they were deployed to areas prone to military attacks. The Anglophone rebels have attacked numerous schools over the past 2 years, in some cases abducting teachers and students. The commander of government troops in the northwest, General Robinson Aga, says the military will make sure all schools are safe before September 3rd, when the school year begins. He says soldiers will kill all rebels who fail to disarm and surrender.
We have got firm instructions from the hierarchy. We will shoot them right at their hideouts. This situation has to come to an end. You cannot accept that people cut roads, burn bridges, burn schools.
Cameroon says the rebels have torched more than 130 schools, while the separatists accuse the military of burning the schools to flush them out of hiding. The military has denied the accusation. For the past months, the government and civic society groups have called for the schools to reopen. Jude Mbaku, a campaigner for the Educate Them Now movement, says it is vital for both troops and rebels to consider schools no-go zones.
Belligerents of the crisis in the Northwest and the Southwest region are not doing enough to ensure the right to education. We call for ceasefire and stop all the attacks on educational structures, on learners, and on teachers.
The conflict in Cameroon's English-speaking regions started in 2016 when teachers and lawyers protested the dominance of French language and officials in the bilingual country. Armed separatists in 2017 began demanding a separate English-speaking state, saying they would make the area ungovernable. More than 2,000 people, including soldiers and police, have been killed in mounting violence since. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bamenda, Northwestern Cameroon.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Yawa by the Nigerian artist Tekno.
Monica, don't be today. Me and you done the fighting, don't tell. I no go pursue my, I go change my ways. I go reduce the banana, I no go do it again. If you leave me, now I go there. Baby, now I go there. I go play for food, Aje. That be April food, Aje. This is how I used to do, Aje. Only you go chop belly food, Aje. That be April food, Aje. Cassava for two, Aje. Baby, all for you, Aje. Oh my baby, forgive me. I don't go do it again. I don't get excuse. I body do kung fu. You know say Penelope be fine. She do me one by two, yeah. When you act the alcohol, now you my shaggy shaggy oil. My eye on the turn, I come the follow.
We've been listening to Nigerian musician Tekno with the song Yawa. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and we're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Baby, I'm perfect, Aji. Cassava for two, Aji. Baby, I'm for you,
yeah. I stay away from these girls. All of me for you.